advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world-famous Sofa King Podcast.
Please, read from sheets. I am. Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am. Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King.
Retard. You say funny things.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, and Bryn's getting sauced for the radio edition already.
I have rituals and obligations.
We have so many bottles that different people gave us, we have to drink each one on every episode.
The ritual is that I have it during the please read from sheets part, and that's just obsessive compulsive.
Now what's the new ritual?
The obligation is that someone gave us a gift of whiskey. Yeah. We have Greg DeWitt Bullet today, and so I promised I would try it on air.
And this is different than the Pat Jimenez?
Yeah, that's Greg gave us the bullet, the green, the rye.
And the Jimenez is
the orange.
Orange? And I guess Dave was gonna wait to get sauced, but now he's pouring himself a glass. So he felt obligated.
We guilted
also.
Him into it.
If we're doing what we're doing.
Oh man. This stuff sounds for the dead air.
There we go.
No, that's pretty good.
It's rye. No, it's not bad.
It's rye. Very rye-y.
Rye whiskey, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep. Can you taste it?
Ham and Swiss.
Through the radio?
If I drink enough of it, I might die.
Why is that? Oh, you're allergic to rye?
No. It was just a really clumsy segue into the topic today, which is near-death experiences.
I was trying to connect celery.
And like that was horrible.
Anaphylaxis. Oh, I was like, what's that about? I don't know. That's why he didn't want to drink it.
No, it was just a really bad segue.
He has a legit reason
behind
that. If I drink
a bunch of it, I might die.
Because our topic today is near-death experiences.
You know who almost had a near-death experience?
Who?
A door-to-door salesman. I was mentioning this to you last night. So this,
I heard this story and it contained a lot of F words. You have to edit. No, go ahead.
No, I won't. I'm not going to F bomb it. I live in an area where these people come door to door all the time. Like they're selling alarms, they're selling carpet cleaning. You know, they want to clean your carpet for free. It's a simple no. So the lady, she's very persistent, very very persistent, and I'm just getting mad.
Very
and
resistant.
So, yeah, yes. And right. So I'm like, take your flyer back. I don't want it. Please leave. And she's like, no, but. And I said, no, but you need to leave. And they just don't leave. Like, I don't understand why you want to get beat up on my front porch.
Because they have to be persistent to be successful. Like, that's a tough job.
That's not
job.
Successful. Like, yeah. that's like.
You, the next guy probably did it, though.
Maybe, but that's so annoying. It's like. I said the same thing about my alarm. Like I have a one alarm sign in the front of my house, but my alarm is a different brand.
Right.
And the brand that I have, they come to my door and they're like, hey, I just want to talk to you about this or that. And I said, no, I already have it. No, you don't. I don't.
Why don't you switch the sign? You just like,
I don't have, they're supposed to bring me one and they never did. So that's
tell
their
that
fault.
Guy.
Yeah. I do every time they say they'll get me one and they never do. And so like, they try to tell me what I have.
It's Vivint, right?
Yes. And they're like, no, you don't have it. And I said, what? I said, well, I'm paying a bill and I have a panel on my wall that's Vivint. So you can leave. And go get me a sign.
The thing is with door-to-door salesmen, it's like I understand that they need to be persistent in order to catch their sale, but they also need a very important skill set, which is looking in the eye of a person on the other side of the door who is never going to buy it and wants them to leave.
Yeah, and when that, I'm telling
like,
you.
There's no everything about my body language is blatantly telling you, move on to the next one, chief. You don't stand a chance.
There was no body language. It was when I said, I'm getting pissed now, so you better leave. Like, isn't that the sign to probably say, sorry, man? Like, you know.
I appreciate, like, as a previous salesman, I appreciate some of their, like, lingo and stuff, though. Those guys are funny sometimes.
No,
like,
they do.
Like, I'm broke. I'm sorry. They're like, I got glue. I can fix it. Like, they've got little comebacks and little
quips.
No,
they do. And for everything I said, no, my carpet's already Scotch-brighted.
The funniest thing.
But we can clean your furniture. I don't know. I'm telling you right now, I don't want your services. Take your feet and walk off of my yard. And they're like, and they keep going. It's like a recipe for disaster.
One time Sid was at our house.
Disaster.
This dude walked up with some like orange glow supposed to work on your hardwood floors, clean your sink, and polish your car. Like it was like the miracle magic thing. Well, Sid had a Subaru at the time and the hood was all heat stressed, like distressed, like not fixing that. That needs to be painted. It was like a factory recall.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, yo, let me check this out, man. Let me show you something. And Sid's like, that ain't going to work, dude. He's like, no, check this out. And he walked over to the car. I'm like watching from the back fence because I was like, I'm not having anything to do with this. And he walks up to the car and he like sprays it on the rag. He's like, check this out. Oh man. And he just walked away. He didn't do anything. He just walked.
Oh man.
It was like Napoleon Dynamite where he runs over the Tupperware bowl or whatever and it just breaks. He's like, man. He just drives off.
Wow.
It was great.
Well, at least he had full faith in his product though.
Yeah.
And he didn't stay like and keep trying to rub it. Like,
no. He knew he lost the battle and he moved on to the next one.
So speaking of salesmen with near death experiences, what do we have for today?
So big phenomenon. The whole idea of someone who dies, like biologically, physically, technically dies, and then they're resuscitated, brought back from the dead, and then they record, you know, they'll discuss certain experiences that they had, and the body of experiences tend to be reliably similar. And it's one of those cases. I mean, I look at it a lot like alien abductions, in that I know that. And for those of you who didn't listen to the alien abduction episode, you should. But I think that with alien abductions and with this, I think a lot of people claim this because they've already heard about it. But the earlier cases, or the cases where people genuinely hadn't heard about the metrics of what you go through with an NDE, those are the interesting cases to me. Because then when they haven't heard this stuff, but then they have a similar experience, that's what you end up wanting to look at to see if it's actually happening or not. And again, just like with alien abductions, I admit there are a group of people who I would call abductees who I think genuinely have experienced the symptoms of being abducted by an alien, but I don't necessarily believe there was an alien.
Yeah.
Something is happening psychologically to a group of people that genuinely make them think this happened. And something is happening, perhaps physiologically, perhaps just a complete fake in their brain, but something is happening to people who die and come back to life that makes them come back and announce a similar enough set of circumstances that if you cut the BS aside and the people who are just lying or making it up, or even if they're not lying, it's just in culture so they think they genuinely talk themselves into it. I think at the core of it, there are people who genuinely experience this, and whether you believe in an afterlife or not, it sort of warrants looking at because it's a common enough worldwide phenomenon. Right?
Yeah, I was reading like statistically, you're no more likely to have the experience based on if you're more religious or if you have had other things in your life that were traumatic.
Right.
Like it happens evenly statistically across the global population.
Yeah.
However, people do somehow infuse it
their
is kind
religion.
Of yeah, it's kind of customized and tailored. The experience is tailored to your religion. So
yes.
Like, you know, from people from India see one thing versus people in the United States see angels.
And atheists who go through it will say that they just saw like loved ones or felt a presence, but a Christian might say they actually saw Jesus or Saint Peter or some. Like people tend to
it's
mold
it's in your
to
mind,
their, right.
Yeah, it's your natural bias. Like those are the things that you live in,
right? I think it would be completely different if every single person who did it like came back and they were like, nope, it was a talking three-headed goat with star eyes.
Dude had a mustache.
I mean, it's like
everybody.
So, then it's like, well, that's odd, but no, everybody does.
Well, blue shirt,
have
mustache. Yeah, exactly. His name was Hector.
Yeah. Everybody's
the
got their cultural
greasy
bent on
Dago hair.
Hector the heaven greeter with a mustache.
No, and like you guys know, I got hit on my motorcycle and you know, flew down the street, hit the
ground. Tell me, I know this vaguely, but I don't know all the details.
Well, I mean, I was riding, I got hit by a car, I got T-boned, and I flew down the street like. I didn't pass out. Like I didn't knock out. I knew I was flying through the air. I hit the ground. I knew I couldn't catch my breath.
Even a car can't knock Brad out. God,
yeah.
You're so
and
tough.
And I literally was taking off my helmet, just telling myself like, catch my breath. And then I'll see if anything's wrong internally, like just feel. not thinking that my body's in shock and I won't be able to feel anything.
Right.
I didn't have like a flash or like light or, I mean, I literally was almost dead. Like, I mean, my handlebars ripped through my legs. It was basically, if it would have been a millimeter in deeper, it would have torn my femoral artery and I would have bled out right there. I mean, I was damaged really good. My chest plate was broke. Collarbones were separated. My back's jacked up. I mean, it tore my legs open, both of them, from my clip-ons. And I when I hit the car, I literally felt my feet coming out of my shoes. You know how like you see like shoes left in a certain spot after somebody gets ran over?
Yeah.
That's the funniest thing because I've always had a fascination with that. When I was young, I saw a guy and a kid get hit by a car jaywalking and they got ran over and their shoes were in the same pattern just on the ground.
Wow.
Like did not move, that's knocked them right out of their shoes.
People don't tie their shoes tight enough or something.
I guess
I
not.
Understand.
And mine, I mean, I assume they were loose. Action. Yeah. And so like the first thing I felt was like my shoes coming off of my feet, which was weird. Like, I mean, that's like the weirdest thing to feel like when you're getting hit by a car. And so like when I was on the ground though, and I couldn't, like, I literally was like, I might be dying right now. Like, I don't know. And my family, like my daughter, you know, my wife, the things that I cared about literally like flashed before my eyes. Like those were the things that were coming into my brain. My brain was like putting those in my head. So I don't know, maybe I wasn't close enough to death, you know, like, because you can't kill me by hitting me with a car, but, you know,
was,
so like,
maybe
that's,
it was
that's,
your upside
that,
down cross tattoos on your calves.
Yeah, maybe. And like, I that was my experience, you know, like, I don't know that that qualifies as a near death experience. I almost died. Like those were the things happening, but I didn't see a light. I didn't see, you know, and I'm sure there's more extreme circumstances. My grandpa, who was ill for my whole life, he was being operated on, and I think it was when he had his knee replaced. He told me a story about him hovering over his body in the operating room, watching them operate on him. And he didn't go to church, but he was religious. Like he did believe in God. He read the Bible, and he had some weird thing going on though, where he was upset at God or something. I don't know. You know how people get.
It happens.
But he would tell me this story about how he was outside of his body, basically like a pool table light over a pool table, you know, like just hovering and watching them operate. And he knew what was going on the whole time.
And that's the more standard near death experience. And it's usually studied by legitimate researchers, neuroscientists, medical doctors. I mean, they study this phenomenon because I don't think they're trying to prove that God exists or that there's a soul. I think they're genuinely curious about how is it that people are having this experience when there is no electrical activity in their brain because their brain is dead.
Right.
Like there should be no sensory experiences occurring to this person's body, but it is. And it was first recorded, I'm sure it goes way back before this, but it first started getting recorded in the 18th century from a French military doctor who on the battlefield would be, you know, after he would save someone's life because they'd been stabbed or whatever, and he would talk to him, and he started to notice that a lot of soldiers reported this similar thing, and he was sort of the first one who wrote about it. And you see a surge of it. Like, historically, you tended to find the biggest cases of it happening during war, and people get all, you know, mystical or weird or whatever about that.
Well,
but I mean,
it's a traumatic time. Well,
right,
it's a good sample of death happening.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
It's a
And again, some skeptics of NDEs, which, and a lot of them have really good points and counterpoints to make, but one argument that skeptics often make for some reason is like they point to the fact that, you know, it only, like, why does it only happen to people with this particular, like, it tends to happen with heart attacks,
right?
And it tends,
yeah,
like, so
I saw a lot of that,
but
like,
I mean, the fact of the matter
is
if you have a heart attack, they drive you to a hospital. When you're in a hospital, you die. Yeah. and they bring you back.
There's a much larger occurrence of resuscitation in that particular
field. That's why it happens in battlefields. That's why it happens with car crashes, with heart attacks. It's not anything mystical about it. It's just you're the one being resuscitated. If you got hit on your motorcycle, Brad, and it was 1 millimeter deeper and you were out in the middle of nowhere and couldn't get to a hospital, there's no chance of you having a near-death experience.
Well, I could have had one right before I died, but you would never know about it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so. But I mean, you have, I mean, odds are, statistically speaking, you're going to be in a hospital because that's when you die and you come back to life.
Or they're there resuscitating.
Right, they're there resuscitating you.
That's true. Like, you don't know how many people have had them. Maybe everybody has them right when they're dying.
Well,
see the light. You know, your brain showing
right,
light
like as you're dying, maybe you're dying. You do the whole thing. But
because you see that in movies where they're like dying and they're like, oh, I'm coming. You know, like you know, they show the light and
But the thing is though, the only in America, according to a Gallup poll, 5% of the American population, 5% of people who have died and been brought back report an NDE, and in Germany it was 4%. So it's not like everyone who dies and comes back has this experience. 5% of people who die and get resuscitated have a near-death experience.
Well, Dave, I read the U.S. population; it was more like 3%.
Mm-mm. Well, so. Did you
there's like
in...
several studies. There's that guy Kenneth Ring.
Did you factor in African Americans?
He classified those into stages, and 60%. Experience the peace and enlightenment feeling, and only 10% actually enter the light, like report entering the light. From one study.
Of the percentage you have.
You enter the light, you're dying, like you're dead. Like that's when you die.
I think another thing is like you don't have dude passerby like as a witness, you know what I mean? Like a lot of stuff happens. And like when you're in an instance where like someone's having a heart attack, their primary concern is not to hook up an EEG or like an MRI or a CAT scan to study the occurrence of death during that time because their main thing is to get you to live. It'd be interesting to see if like, you know, someone that knows they're passing or something, if they go ahead and volunteer for some type of near-death research, like in like some, you know,
like, dude, you're dying from cancer anyway.
You might as well let us see what happens.
I mean, machines up to
there's
you.
There's a lot of hospitals that try to study it, but that's the key difficulty. It's like we're dealing with someone who's dying.
Because if they're sitting there,
your
if
kids
want to
hold your hand, not slide you into an MRI machine and wait.
Yeah,
to
if
see
they're
the color.
If they're sitting there dying and you're more worried about trying to get the near death experience, and then they actually die and you could have saved them, you're screwed.
Exactly.
Like that's over.
And then even if they did die and you brought them back, there's only a 5% chance they would have had an NDE anyway. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very difficult phenomenon to study,
I wonder how many people have had them and just won't say anything because they think people will think they're crazy.
Oh, I'm sure there's tons of them. I'm sure there's a whole lot of
people. I wonder what the percentage is, really.
I mean, it might be that you're an atheist and don't believe in anything, and then you have it and you don't say anything because that changes your worldview.
I don't think that just because you're an atheist, you won't have one. I think that's
plenty of atheists have them.
I would think that because, like, most atheists probably grew up in church or so. I mean, I guess
less of a willingness to admit that.
Oh, true.
Right. Or even if, like, I forget the number, I think something like 9% of them have, like, a really dark near-death experience where
that's
it's very
just because
paranoid
that's what's
and
in
tormentful.
Your brain.
But again, you might be like a super Christian and be one of the 9% who has a horrible experience and you come back and you're not saying anything because you're like really worried.
going to hell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like you're a Christian and you like have a near-death experience and you end up seeing Krishna. And it's like, damn.
I think someone that truly believes and has a comfort in death is going to have an experience that's probably more smooth and comfortable, where like someone like myself that thinks I'm worm food is going to like panic and have a horrible experience probably.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're freaking out. And I don't know. I think we can discuss that more, but I think that it's kind of an awkward thing to say whether, you know, you're atheist or Christian, you have different ones, but.
The two of the big names that kind of kicked things off, there was a guy named Bruce Grayson, a doctor who's one of the first ones to study NDEs. And he's the main reason he shows up. If you end up looking into any of this on your own, if you see the Grayson scale, there's like 16 categories of what he thinks happened in an NDE, and he ranks them between a 0, a 1, or a 2. So if you had an NDE, you have between 0 and 32 of the on the scale. So if you had a 32, you experienced everything that anyone could possibly experience. And if you had like a 5, you had a couple of them. But the Grayson scale is one way they measure, I guess, the intensity of the NDE, if that makes any sense, or how many of the common experiences you share.
Yeah. Is this – now, the NDEs, like, what's the purpose of even studying them? Like, is it – I mean, are we just trying to figure out what they are? Because I honestly feel like it's your brain.
I think there's a couple of purposes to study them, and I think it depends on the motivation of the studier. I think a lot – because, I mean, you look, and I mean legitimate neuroscientists, reputation on the line, only doing it medically above board, et cetera, are studying this phenomenon, like, for pure scientific purposes. Like I said,
just trying to figure out what it is.
They're trying to figure out what it is. They're trying to figure out how is this person possibly processing this if nothing is in the body.
Yeah, and it just seems like the last burst of, like, everything that goes into your brain. You have adrenaline, you have all this stuff. And I don't know. It just seems common sense.
Well, but there's some cases where there isn't.
Well, sometimes I'll get to
some of the cases. There are cases where there is no burst of
adrenaline, like, or whatever.
There are some strong cases that we'll definitely talk about that make you kind of go, okay, well, that one is unique. It kind of rules out some of the skeptical biological response.
Somebody's going to study everything. There's some dude in the rainforest studying one caterpillar for 20 years and made a life career out of it. So, I mean, there's nothing will be left alone.
I'm sure there's tons of hucksters and charlatans that are, like, trying to push magic crystals.
Need a Dave shirt, like, with a quickness. Hucksters and charlatans abroad.
And they're trying to push magic crystals on people and say that they can ensure an ND. And I mean, for every legitimate doctor studying,
people actually want to experience a near-death experience.
I would like to believe
this,
just
God.
Some comfort if they figured it out. And I'm like, cool, that's good to know.
Yeah, and people do. Yeah. I mean, supposedly a particular dose of the drug ketamine can make you have the NDE response.
Well, yeah.
G-lock, which is a gravity-induced loss of consciousness, like from testing or being in a jet plane or something, that causes you to have the
machines.
Same kind of symptoms. Yeah,
I had one of those. Machines. I was on a carousel one time and I fell off the horse. Is that what that is? A G-lock?
That's when your brain is actually beside you because they put you in that centrifuge and spun you. That's because it's real.
And I know there's some stuff.
All your blood's in your left ear.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, that's part of the time machine where it's actually separating yourself into pieces, into particles, so you can fly through time.
There are ways to duplicate the experience, but it's not, I would argue, the same as having the experience. You're just having even hypoxia, just not having enough blood in your brain, you're going to have some of these experiences.
Yeah.
But in all those cases, you're alive. So right. I think that's the key difference in why people are studying it. But so the Moody model, for any listeners who don't know exactly what the near-death experience is, there's a set of symptoms or experiences or whatever. And Raymond Moody detailed this out in 1975 in a book called Life After Life. And again, Moody was a legitimate scientist. He was a doctor, and he started looking into this stuff because he kept seeing patients who were having these experiences. And he has a set of experiences that is called Moody's model. And step one is the person will hear a strange sound, a buzzing, a ringing, something like that, while they feel that they are dying. And this starts after the person has become officially brain dead. So the person is brain dead, and then the person starts to hear a loud sound, and they feel like they are dying, even though they're technically brain dead at the moment. So there's no neurological activity. Because they'll track these in a lot of cases. An EEG will stop registering electricity in the brain at 20 seconds, and some of these people won't start experiencing it for later than 20 seconds.
How do they know?
Yeah,
though?
I was wondering that. Like, that's just based off of the
witness.
That's
just based off hearsay. Like, oh, like based 3 minutes later, I started.
Well,
doing
based
this.
Off
like,
of the people who have near death experiences where they can say this or this or this happened in the room while you were trying to resuscitate
the
me.
Time frame
they'll accurately account things that have happened 20 seconds after the electrical.
Yeah.
Like the brain still had electricity for 20 seconds. The doctor said.
But are they measuring it for 20 seconds? Because I would believe that some people could have it longer.
I'm sure they could. But a lot of them they are. And a lot of them there is an active EEG right there.
Yeah.
The cases that they study, they look back at the medical records, et cetera. But anyway, the first one is that, the strange sound. Second one is the person has a sense of peace and painlessness. The third one is the out-of-body experience, which some people have where, like you said it was your grandfather,
yeah.
where they leave their body, they usually float above the body, and they see the attempts of resuscitation happening in the room. In some more extreme cases, they'll sort of float around the hospital and overhear conversations that relatives are having, and they'll actually account the things accurately after the case. But there's a tunnel experience where they usually be drawn towards a tunnel at really high speed. And at the end of the tunnel, there's usually a really bright glowing light that they're heading towards. The next one is rising rapidly into the heavens, and they feel like they're flying through the sky, like straight up, basically. Couple more. They encounter people of light. And again, this is one that starts to get sort of culturally infused by your variant, like a lot of people might just report that it's just beings made of light, or someone will say it's an angel, or someone will say it was Jesus Christ, or someone will say, but there's a light person, and several of them, a lot of people say it's their relatives and loved ones who are there to greet them, things like that.
Which makes no sense.
Then there's the big being of light that shows up that isn't just one of the lesser beings. It's like the big kahuna.
Well, that's God.
The cosmic muffin shows up, you know.
The cosmic muffin.
In all of its herbs. The cosmic muffin and all of his lightness shows up in glory. Then there's a life review where the being of light, the cosmic muffin, presents the dying person with a look of everything that they've done. And then the being of light tells them, it's not your time, you have to return. And in general, the person doesn't want to return.
Talks.
Cosmic muffin and will let you know, give you. And most people say
it. Ahead.
Most people say there's no vocabulary, there's no words spoken, but you fully understand
you
that the being says now is not the time, and then you're back in the body.
Yes, I believe that.
So that is the
because the cosmic muffin doesn't have a mouth; he just goes right into your brain.
Yeah, he beams straight into your brain. Yeah.
I got a t-shirt, like it's going. I'm writing stuff right now. There's the gates of heaven, a muffin on a throne.
So that's Moody's model. Like that's the, and again, this got tracked a lot, starting to get tracked a lot in Vietnam because there was so much trauma and so much. And again, it becomes a bigger and a bigger phenomenon to study right now because we are bringing more and more people back. Like if this was 1800, most people were just, I wish I could bring that guy back to life. Well, get a pine box ready. But it's like now we're reaching a point where more and more people can get revived. So more and more people, I mean, if 5% of people who have died and come back have a near-death experience and the number of people who die and come back is constantly getting higher with medical advancements, then we're going to constantly have more near-death experiences.
Yeah, last week told me that they reanimated like a dog or something
that was frozen
and then brought it all the way back.
Yeah, they're starting to do that, the reanimation, and it's kind of creepy. That's not kind of creepy.
That's super creepy.
No, it's kind of creepy.
That is kind of super creepy.
Dog sickle. You
know, write that down too, because that's actually it. I forgot about that. But yeah, the reanimation.
Well, here's one that kind of gets towards that with a person, and this is one of those cases that I mentioned because this is one where we don't have the rush of hormones or adrenalines happening at the moment of the resuscitation and all that stuff. So there was a woman named Pam Reynolds, the Pam Reynolds case in 1991. She was 35 years old. She had an aneurysm in her brain, and she had to undergo surgery to remove the aneurysm, okay? Mm-hmm. So the surgeon did what at the time was considered a radical procedure, which is a hypothermic cardiac arrest. So they chill the body to 60 degrees, and then they drain all the blood from the head. Because if all the blood is drained from the head
she and you're
at 60 degrees,
aneurysm,
there's no death, there's no lack of oxygen, dead cells happening in your brain. So they've frozen her, and they've drained all the blood from her head, and then they remove it, okay? To boot, they put a 100 decibel sound in her ears, which were just like clicks going at a random pattern.
That's to keep brain activity.
Well, no, it was to see if there is any brain activity because they didn't want to do anything if there was brain activity. So they had an EEG monitoring her because the sound was so loud that they would see spikes in her brain if she was able to process any sensory input because it was so loud. I forget what 100 decibels is. I read it in
the
story.
It's a lot.
It's loud. It's pretty loud.
It's loud. So there's a loud thing, and they're watching her EEG flat line, nothing. She's not hearing the sounds. She's dead. Her brain has no blood in it. Like, that's about as dead as you're going to get. And she had
her heart's probably on a machine or whatever. Yeah.
And she was both dead in her brain and her body. And then, and this is a quote from the article. This is an article in The Atlantic from 2015 that talks a lot about the science of near-death experiences. And it says, quote, "Yet after the surgery, she reported having a powerful NDE, including an out-of-body experience, and accurately recalled several details about what was going on in the operating room, such as the shape of the bone saw." It was already in the room, you know. It's a bone saw. How many shapes can there be? Yeah. But anyway,
bone saw. The one I use is just like the one that everybody else uses.
She reported snatches of conversation between the medical staff. And
is that your word or theirs?
That's their word. Snatches. And she even reported the fact that they were listening to the Hotel California, which they did during the surgery when she was completely flatlined and dead. And she accounted enough that people were like, well, snap, like, you were dead.
Wow.
And she still could recall some of the conversation that was occurring. I kind of rule out the bone saw. You could pretty accurately, if you've ever seen a bone saw, you could be like, yeah, I even remember the bone saw. It was shaped like this. Well, yeah, that's what they're shaped like.
I don't think she was conscious seeing the bone saw. I can't. They put you out.
Seen a bone saw.
I don't know what a bone saw looks like.
But if you did.
Right. Like, I don't know. You know. I don't discount that one. I'm just keeping it.
Okay.
I'm just saying, because she wouldn't be conscious going in the room.
I've never seen the bone saw. I think that you're, like, even though you're dead, like, in order to be able to bring you back, you're not dead. Like, I mean, in all accounts, medical sense. Yes, your brain is not functioning, your body's not functioning, but like I
think if you equate us to like a bioorganic machine, if you think about it that way, it's hard for people to relate like a car versus a person.
Yeah.
But there's hoses that carry fluid and a thing that happens like a heart to make things run and process things and pump things. If you think of us as like a biomechanical machine turned off, the only problem is that we degrade. So there's a problem with like oxygen when things aren't present, stuff starts to break down quickly.
Brain damage, yes. Right.
But it's just turning us off, putting it in a suspended state, and then turning us back on.
Yeah.
That's the difference, is that we're organic, so we could degrade. But I think if you think about it in that rationality, then you could be turned off. But if you're off, how are you observing anything?
But I mean, could it be like a state of sleep where your brain isn't creating any activity that show up on a machine that we have that's 500 years old because they don't update technology?
These are all very good questions, and these are the questions that skeptics ask. But this particular case, the fact that they were specifically like trying to get her to hear something and monitoring her brain to see if it was registering hearing, and it wasn't, and then couple that fact with, I have 100 decibels of sound over my ears, and I could still account what the conversation was. Like, even if I were in some way conscious, I'm not going to hear the conversation. I'm just going to hear this crazy noise on my headset.
Maybe when they put you out, though, you get, like, superpowers. Like, you can hear.
And then somehow she heard Hotel California.
And she heard Hotel California. It's one of the better cases that's been studied.
Maybe it was a good guess.
Yeah,
she's
maybe.
Like, you guys were listening to Hotel California.
She looked at the doctor. She's like, Hotel California is going down.
I saw that guy's shoes.
Down a dark, dusty highway. You got to do it.
He was wearing penny loafers.
I knew that was the song. Yeah,
this guy. He had his Eagles t-shirt on when he was doing like the pre-op conversation. Wow. You know.
Penny loafers and the bone saw.
That was a great band.
Yeah. Penny loafers and the bone saw. That's my punk band. Yeah. Yeah. Dead Baby Milkshakes.
Ooh. Wasn't that?
Wasn't that awkward? That was the last word of that statement.
And there was another case. There was a neuroscientist, and it's not as impressive as that first case, but this is a neuroscientist, was an atheist, taught at Harvard, had his own neuroscience practice. And he died and had an NDE, and he didn't say much about what he experienced in the NDE, but he experienced enough that he was sort of concerned about this now and sort of gave it some credence, and he started looking into it, and then he studied his own charts, he basically concluded, yes, I was completely gone. He looked at the EEG results, et cetera, and he was one of the ones that was tracking, these are things that I noted after I was brain dead. And he was looking at all the EEG readings, all the charts, all the everything. And he is a neuroscientist. Now he studies it formally, but he didn't before that. And he's still an atheist even after the fact. But I mean, he had one. So I mean, a lot of, like I said, fairly reputable people are looking into this. It's not just like wackadoos with healing crystals. It's like, you know.
I think there's those cases that are kind of one-off where you're like, wow, that is crazy. Mm-hmm. But I think there, I mean, just reading some of the reports, some of the science stuff, like there are explanations for a majority of like people having tunnel vision, you know, like seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Just standing up too quickly. We've all had that happen.
Well, yeah, you get lightheaded. Like,
lightheaded.
Yeah, that's
like
the thing.
Feeling like you're going to float away, like you weigh nothing.
Extreme fear and oxygen loss, you know, can cause that. And like there are numerous explanations to, you know, almost all near-death experiences except for possibly hearing people what they're saying.
Being outside your body is definitely a clear separation between getting up too quickly and like getting lightheaded and like hearing Hotel California.
Man, I stood up too quick. I left my body.
I stood up so fast I heard Hotel California.
Yeah, are you dreaming though? You know, like, you know, did you, I don't know.
It's dreaming details though.
It's like
accurate details and accounts.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to get on board with as far as like, I know that the stuff happens. Like, I'm not, you know, discounting it, but there are explanations.
I think there's definitely a lot of people that want attention too that take advantage of it.
For sure.
Like there's that little kid that made up that story and he was like
about going to heaven. Yeah, the dad wrote a book.
Yeah, and a movie made about it, and then it came to light that he lied.
Yeah,
the movie was a different one.
Of course he did. He didn't go. Yeah. He didn't talk to God. I mean, like you don't like if you take angel dust. You know, like I, you know, projector beams shot out of my eyeballs, you know, like this is, you know, I was the laser pigeon, you know what I mean? For like 15 minutes, like your brain is crazy. Like your brain, you know, people on mushrooms watch the walls melt, you know what I mean? Like, and you see God or Satan, you know, like
Satan. How accurately?
Yeah, you really
Satan. That's how you say it. Yeah. That's how you say our Lord's name.
I was gonna say you have like you made sure you said that right.
Satan. You don't want to say it.
It's
wrong.
In your contract.
Yes.
How you had to pronounce it.
Anyway.
That?
Yeah. How do you think we're getting so many downloads, boys?
That's what's happening.
Come on.
Wait. Did you Brent's sell my soul?
Out. I didn't sign anything.
Okay. I hadn't sold my soul yet. I saved it for this.
I want like a podcast prenup.
But
if you're signing up with Satan, I want no part of that.
Well, once we start, like, we'll get big and then start going downhill again, then you can sell yours. Just keep it.
I'll wait till I have to.
One of the, I mean, I was reading some pretty hardcore skeptical stuff, and one of the skeptical things that they say, and again, these are skeptics trying to disprove life after death. They don't think that is a factor, so we have to rule everything else out. And a lot of skeptics who look at the best cases that are out there, they basically say this is not a near-death experience. You haven't left your body. It's actually clairvoyance and ESP. It's a extra sensory perception that we're unaware of, and we're just catching rare So, and most people would think if you're a skeptic – and you're going for psychic phenomenon, you're stretching, but that tends to be what happens. So psychic or not, people are dying.
I'm going to quickly elaborate. I guess the guys want me to go into my laser beam shooting out of my eyeballs experience because that it actually happened.
you can't just say that and walk away.
What happened was reason being my – mouth tastes like weed is what I was talking about, and Brent was questioning my drug use. the bullet whiskey and the coffee didn't leave a good taste in my mouth. So what happened was I had a buddy allegedly who had a blunt, and we smoked it and allegedly and hotboxed his vehicle.
Let's just say Chad.
Yeah, and so like what happened was I was sitting there, we were talking. Hotbox in the vehicle, and this is a long time ago, mind you. And we were listening to a CD. It was his brother's CD. We did music and whatnot. And literally, my ears, I went deaf. I couldn't hear anything. And I started watching the words come out of the CD player. And I was watching them float in front of me, and I was reading the words of the lyrics of the song in front of me. And I look over, and we're at this house party, and there's people walking in the front door. Everybody had hoods on. It was cultish, and it all of a sudden laser or projectors shot out of my eyeballs onto the window of the vehicle, and I was watching the movie of my life. And since a baby, I had been raised to be the leader of this cult, and this was the time I was going to be inducted as the leader of the cult inside of this house that we were at. And I'm freaking out, right? I'm watching this movie that my whole life has been a lie and a farce, you know, to where I was raised to be who I am so that I could take over the leadership of this cult. And all of a sudden, he starts talking to me, and he's God.
And your homeboy.
My buddy. He's literally, he's asking me questions. He's like, so what do you think? You know, and his voice is super deep and echoey, and it's this crazy, like, literally, like, it's nothing I can mimic or imitate, you know?
Did he look like a cosmic muffin?
No, he wasn't a cosmic muffin. Like, he looked normal, but his voice was just the most almighty thing I had ever heard. And we talked for a second, and I kind of vaguely remember what we talked about. He was just asking if I believed or not, you know? And I don't know, maybe he wasn't God. Maybe it was Satan. And, you know, we were talking, and then all of a sudden he's talking in this crazy voice, and then he goes, all right, man, you ready to go back in? Like, it was just back to normal. And we go in the house, and I'm just destroyed. Like, I'm freaking out. I'm up against the wall. Like, I'm like, I got to get out of here. Mind you, I was the designated driver.
Had Chad smoked before?
Yeah.
So you had a basis of comparison.
Yeah.
So my buddy Trent has told me a ton of stories.
No. That doesn't happen. Nothing happened like this ever to me before. Like, I you know, and so literally that I, you know, I went to bed that night. We made it home. I don't remember how. And I woke up the next morning questioning if it was real or not. It was so real. It in my head, it really happened.
Right.
So, you know, that's where, you know, I come in to think that, you know, our brain is just out there. You know what I mean? People have had those mushroom trips, those, you know, people go on ayahuasca and see crazy things. You know, we were talking about this the other day, you know.
So like, does the main question I have from that is, how's your cult doing?
It's starting right now. This is what's happening. So, like, you just saw the future because it's the Sofa King army.
No comment.
Because you never denied the fact that you never mentioned whether or not you did get indoctrinated as the leader of the
cult. So, moving along.
Okay. But no. I mean, that you touch on a lot of the things that skeptics get into. I mean, the fact that specific brain states, lack of oxygen, you know, the feeling of peace and joy could just
PCP
be
in your system.
You know, endorphins are being released by your brain because your body is in trauma.
Yeah.
I mean, all these things are part of it. And again, the skeptics tend to come back and say, but the brain is dead. Like, there's no electrical activity. How is this happening? But
yeah, it's not somebody who's alive that it's happening to. It's somebody who is dying.
Right.
I just think people underestimate, like, the power of what your mind is capable of. It's interpreting a three-dimensional environment in space, like seeing a wall, and you're touching a wall that doesn't really exist in the way
it's there.
Think.
It's really there, though.
It's creating that reality for you, though. Like, who knows what that
and
wall
And we talked
really
about
like.
This in the simulation theory thing. Like, is it really real? Right. Like, this is it really there? Is it there when we're not looking? You know, that type of stuff.
And when you're sad, like, that's just chemicals hitting some neuron, creating that
depression,
that recipe for that feeling, for happiness, for anything. And like I said, my friend Trent has done mushrooms in Amsterdam a long time ago with some friends. And the things that happen with that, that experience is so surreal and so, it's just amazing that those things aren't really happening. But then, they sort of are really
real
happening.
To this day.
You start to question whether is that a distortion of your perception of reality, or are you seeing things that you don't normally see? You know what I mean? Like, are you somehow, if you didn't have a nose, you couldn't smell a fart. Like, are you somehow now releasing a filter? that's credit to Joe Rogan. That's the fart theory.
Yeah.
But basically, like, if you didn't, like, you, yeah. If
you could taste it.
You and Dave are riding around the car and Dave's busting farts. It's Joe Rogan's point. Like, you wouldn't know you're sitting in Dave's fart all day. Like, there's Wi-Fi around us. There's infrared. There's all these things around us that we don't know are there. And is somehow because of a different state of mindset or perception, are you now able to see something else? And so that's what a lot of people equate to. There's a lot of people that do research with ketamine. DMT is a big one.
Yeah.
And that's dimethyltryptamine. And so there were some studies done by a guy named Rick Strassman. He's the author of The Spirit Molecule. And there's a really cool documentary that they made about the book. I do own the book. We won't go into what page I'm on. It's probably somewhere around 60. I think I actually made it a ways into that book. It was pretty interesting. But they did an actual clinical trial where they took people that were already familiar with psychedelic experiences.
I don't know why you buy books. Like, that's just,
because I want to learn. Like, I'm interested in it, and
you
I
want
to. I want
me
to
too,
to
but
that.
I just don't buy the book.
It's like people with a, it's like people
I'm
with
like,
a
man,
gym
I really love to read that book. I'm not ever
gonna
read
it. It's like, literally like I would compare it to like having a gym membership and never going to the gym. Oh, I see it. I want to do it. I know I would better myself. I'm interested in doing it, and then I
just
can't sit still long
enough
to get through.
Just to be fair, I read as one of my number one hobbies in life, and I still have endless books at home that I'm never going to get to.
And I, so yeah. I want to. I look at that stack of books next to my bed, and I want to do it. And I'll grab it, and I try to do it, and then like your kid jumps
all my
on
books,
your back.
All my books have like a lot of pictures in them, so I can get through them pretty good.
That's why
it's more like a magazine, you know? You can just choose what article you want to read or not.
I could read a book for 3 weeks or watch a one-hour documentary that they made about the book and get like a large portion of it. It's like the 80-20 principle.
You always know they're going to come out with the movie, you know?
It's probably
better
for
your brain. I never read Tom Sawyer. But I saw the movie, you know, like.
Well, the
and listen to the rock song.
The Rick Strassman thing. So they have this clinical setting where they have actual nurses in a clinical setting, and they're injecting dimethyltryptamine. So dimethyltryptamine is basically a chemical structure that really closely neighbors serotonin. And it's weird what can happen if you add one little, like, you know, carbon or hydrogen, and you add something to a chain, it's inert. So there's something like when you take certain drugs, it always says. What does it say? MOAI inhibitors.
Take with food. Right.
Like, you can't take that because it won't work. So somehow in nature, you mentioned ayahuasca earlier. Yeah. These people in the jungle have figured out that you can take this plant and process it, and it has tons of DMT in it.
Yeah.
That's what's happening with ayahuasca trips. But then they also figured out that if you ingest it, nothing happens unless you take it with this other thing that is an MOAI inhibitor.
Yeah.
So it keeps your body from breaking down the DMT so that it actually becomes psychoactive. What Strassman did was actually intravenously inject DMT into these people. And it touches on what Dave had said earlier about that very unique circumstance of a near-death experience. Some of them, and you can watch these on YouTube, some of the interviews with the people that had the DMT experience, their reaction or their experience started with a humming sound that buzzed until it got louder and louder, and they all have something that
that's because your brain's just tripping. Like,
very
it's like, oh my God.
It seems very close to the near death experience. It hums until this point that they break through something, and then they are in a place that they describe
as
the universe.
All this is close to alien abductions.
It's,
you know what I mean? Like, it's like a lot of the same type of things go on.
No, it's similar. The difference with alien abductees is they have a whole host of weird things that don't involve that moment of being abducted, like the paranoia for life about them, the seeing owls, like there's other like weird random things.
Yeah.
But with the NDE, it's like you have that experience and you're done.
But I'm saying the actual, you know, your brain can create that. Your brain
absolutely
can create anxiety. Your brain can make you think that now we're starting to follow pigeons because we're going crazy.
I am a little bit obsessed with pigeons lately.
And the what you just said about DMT, it makes one of the things that I read make a little bit more sense, because I didn't know a whole lot about DMT, but one of the skeptics that I read said that actually it wasn't even a skeptic, it was just an article talking about DMT and how it can mimic the near-death experience. And it basically said what some of the scientists are trying to do in their studies is they're trying to see if there is a part of consciousness, and there's nothing mystical or weird about this, they're just trying to see if some part of our consciousness is not based on the electrical current in our brain. And some people think that there might be some chemical-based consciousness that is still happening on some sub-animalistic level that sort of underrides our brain that we don't know about, because we all focus on this type of consciousness. And maybe that's kind of what they're getting at, is this. I mean, maybe that DMT enhances some other type of consciousness that we actually have, but that we're not aware of. Because that's what most of the scientists are looking at. They're just trying to see, does consciousness in some way still exist once there is no electricity in the brain? And there's a doctor named Pim von Lommel, great name, Pim von Lommel in 2001, again, was just a doctor. He was a cardiologist, saw a lot of NDEs, and that was one of his things. He basically did a lengthy study, and he concluded in his findings that consciousness did continue despite the lack of neuronal activity in the brain. And this is from a medical doctor. He had it peer reviewed, the whole thing. He doesn't say, he doesn't, therefore, there is God in the cosmic muffin, once your soul. I mean, he's just saying at some some level, your body is still processing consciousness even after the brain has died.
Yeah. Well,
and a lot of people have agreed and disagreed.
That's what I kind of feel. Like I feel like we don't know, we don't understand, we don't have the machinery or the technology, or we have the technology and just isn't in the right place yet. Like we're still, you know, like we talked about on the cancer episode, we're still treating people with stuff from the 50s and 60s. You know, you know, the machinery is no different. It's just in a new case, a new shell. It's all the same.
I thought it was
machinery.
Interesting how it was so similar and parallel the NDE experience, though. Like everyone, when they broke through and arrived in this space that they just described as like
the universe,
a oneness with the universe.
Yeah, like, and that's what they describe. That's what NDE.
They commonly can't put things to words, too.
Them, yeah.
Right? There's something that they experience that they said is outside of your perception of language.
And this is the crazy thing. Like, you have the DMT ayahuasca thing about, you know, people experience these near-death experiences. And then there's also articles on debunking it, you know, because everybody has an opinion, but there's no real science as far as you know, stating that it's true or it's not true. You know,
right.
Like I honestly feel like where I'm at is it's just your brain. Your brain's crazy. Like that's you know, I that's how I feel. You know, like right. I don't know, you know, where you guys stand on it, but as far
I'm not sure where I stand. There
I think you can heal yourself. You know what I mean? Like if you have some sort of illness and you're like, I'm going to die tomorrow. Well, you're probably going to die. Right. Or you're like, F you, illness.
If you fight,
I'm here to
stay. There have been controlled experiments that have proved that you can consciously and cognitively concentrate and affect the outcome of random number generators. So like what you're saying about the mind over matter healing yourself has been scientifically proven. Like you can substantially affect random number generators by just focusing mentally on something.
Right.
So one of the other things they had noted in the DMT experience is that when they arrive in that place, they are almost always greeted by some type of intelligent presence.
Mm-hmm.
Aliens.
Aliens. And that it communicates with them in the same fashion that David described earlier, not in words per se or a language of any sort, but just a knowing thing. And there's something else to do with when they arrive, there's a familiarity of I have been here before. I totally remember this. I'm back. Some people say some stuff about sleep.
When you're born.
It's a weird thing of like going to sleep. You just turn off for 8 hours and you're just, where are you? You generally don't remember it. You know what I mean? You wake back up.
Yeah, and going to sleep, like you have that feeling of falling sometimes. Right. You know, like all those.
There's some cool stuff about like you're logging off.
Yeah.
Like when you go play Call of Duty for 8 hours and then you turn off, where's your soldier? Right. So that a lot of people relate to like simulation theory of like, why do you sleep? They don't really have a good reason necessarily for why you sleep. And the thing about sleep,
because I'm tired.
The reason I bring it up is because
that's my reason.
In the world and in nature, DMT is found in everything. It's found in plants. It's in every animal. We all produce it in our pineal gland.
Yeah.
And so when you sleep, it gets produced and it has something to do with dreaming. And there's actually a term called REM intrusion, which causes something called sleep paralysis. There's a set and order of operations that occur in order for you to go to sleep. When you fall asleep, your brain produces glycine and something called GABA or GABA, I think.
Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yes, Yo Gabba Gabba. An orange
DJ
hat
Lance.
Man comes in
What's his
and
name?
Rocks you to sleep. But what it does is it paralyzes.
Wait, who comes in and rocks you to sleep?
Yo Gabba Gabba.
Oh, okay. The man in the orange suit.
In an orange suit, yeah.
That's creepy.
But it paralyzes your muscles so that when you're having a dream that you're being chased, you don't run out the door.
Right.
You know, and they've done some cool experiments where they can neutralize
Except
that.
Except some
cats,
people do.
And cats will just walk around and stuff and meow and they act out their dreams. But what happens a lot of times is people experience those dreams in real time because they're getting a flood of serotonin and of dimethyltryptamine, but they're experiencing it in real time. I actually have personal experience. Like I found out when I was in like the 7th grade, I had like this horrible headache when I was jumping off a diving board. It felt like I got hit in the back of the head with like a baseball bat. And when I landed in the water, I barely could swim to the side. And then it happened again like later when I was like doing bench press later. And so we went to the doctor to figure it out and they did a CAT scan and found out I have a cyst on my pineal gland. And I do a lot of weird stuff with sleep. I have trouble sleeping.
So your pineal gland
paralysis.
Has a baseball bat?
Not a baseball bat, just a small cyst of some sort. Yeah. I don't know because I was actually supposed to, this was the 7th grade. I was
so
supposed to go
cancer.
Back and monitor it and make
sure
that everything's okay. And
yeah, brain cancer.
I'm sure it's fine. Right.
Yeah,
I'm
you're
sure
good.
It's fine. I didn't check up
you're
on it.
You're fine.
Meanwhile, I ate peanut butter at 3 a.m. in my underwear and have sleep paralysis. But
well, yeah, it would be nice if the, you know, you don't get up. Some people do get up and act out their dreams. Like I thought I was peeing in the bathroom and I was peeing in my friend's closet. That happens.
That's because you were drunk.
No, I was like in high school. I wasn't drunk. Like chilling out, you know, went to sleep. I woke up and I did it twice, I think. Like, I can't, I don't really remember. I just remember running into the wall. I couldn't get out the door.
I used to, yeah, when I was a kid, I sleepwalked all the time. I would sleep talk. I would just wander into where my older sisters and my mom was and say a bunch of stuff and whatever. But I don't know. I think my ultimate upshot on the near death experience, I'm really torn by the whole thing. I took a class when I was in college from an amazing professor named Dr. Stafford Betty, who just taught a class on life after death. And it wasn't a religious class. It was just studies of things like this. And you start to read cases and it's like, either this case is a lie or it wasn't accurately told.
Yeah.
But it's peer reviewed, it seems accurate. And if this is peer reviewed and the information is accurate, then it doesn't fit in the paradigm. It doesn't fit the brain as electricity causing consciousness, if this handful of cases tend to be true. So it makes me kind of question. Like I said, even the idea earlier that a lot of skeptics who don't believe in a life after death turn to psychic phenomenon as an answer, because it would explain how all this happens while completely evacuating the idea of a soul or anything like that.
Yeah.
And there was a case called the AWARE study that was done in Southampton, and we'll talk about that in sort of a post-show bonus if you guys want to get to sofakingpodcast.com and download it.
Yeah, and we also have near-death experience or death, so yes, we'll play that real quick. So, yeah, I guess that's it for the radio. Are we saying anything? No?
I'm near death. Bye.
Say hi to the Cosmic Muffin for me. Don't be a retard. Now we're on the web. What's up, people?
Jesus Christ.
We just transitioned from the radio to the web.
Damn you, Brad. Damn you.
So finishing up the topic, near-death experience, do you want to do the game real quick?
No, let me say my thing, because okay. The one thing I hinted at the very end of the radio thing is I talked about a specific study. I mentioned that Kim van Lommel, who's a cardiologist from the Netherlands, and he conducted a study. It wasn't a huge study. It was 344 patients who were resuscitated. And he looked at the number of NDEs and whether or not it was accurate. And again, his conclusions were that they supported the theory that consciousness continued despite the lack of neuronal activity in the brain.
Yes.
And again, he didn't try to get all cosmic about it or weird. He was just saying these people were conscious and their brain was dead. So there's something still causing consciousness to occur.
And that's kind of like, I agree with that. Like, right, that's something I think that, I mean, obviously further investigation needs to go into that to figure out like how that's possible and what's going on. And I know, you know, religious people will call it your soul, because obviously your soul leaves your body and still has consciousness, correct?
Right.
There's a lot of weird religious backing.
I think like in like Buddhist or Indian religion or something, they say like day 49 is when the soul actually enters the body during the period of gestation. And there's some other weird medical stuff that happens. Like that's when your pineal gland develops and it's on day 49.
And how do they figure that? That's kind
of
weird.
I don't know.
Weird,
well, there's right? a bunch of weird stuff tied once again to the pineal gland being your third eye.
There's so many, and that gets into a religious thing and I don't want to get into, but there's so many different contradictions. Like if you read the Bible and know the Bible.
Oh yeah, it's all.
Like, you going back and meeting your family and all that stuff, it doesn't coincide with what the Bible says, and it just doesn't make any sense, you know. So sorry if I offend you, like that's how I feel. Like it, right. There's so I think that completely aside, near death experience is what this guy's saying.
Right.
Your brain is still working after you lose your brain.
Basically. And another doctor dug deeper, actually a doctor named Sam Parnia from the University of Southampton in England. Saw what van Lommel was doing and wanted to do a more thorough, more accurate study. So in 2008, he did a study at 25 hospitals, and he had 15 patients who had cardiac arrest and were then resuscitated. And his idea was, if the big thing about near-death experiences is that people float out of their body,
yeah,
and like leave and like float up above, this person's idea, Dr. Parnia, was to place symbols and prominent images on the tops of things that no one could see. So if you floated out of your body and were physically looking back down, you would be like, oh shit, there's a star
couple
of David
a couple
on
of wavy
there.
Lines.
Right. There's so you could say there's this weird image on the top of this thing, and he even did it in a way that none of the cardiologists, none of the people
on an IV drip on the top of the machine.
Like on a shelf, like on a medical shelf, like a filing cabinet. Yeah. So no, and he didn't let anyone in the room know. None of the doctors knew, the nurses didn't know. The people conducting the post interview to find out whether or not people had NDEs didn't know what rooms had things or if there were things or whatever. So they studied throughout all of England. It was a multi-year study. They looked at 2,060 cardiac arrests. I thought the numbers might be better than this, but only 330 of them survived. Out of the 20,
don't
of the
go
two,
to that hospital.
It was 25 hospitals.
Oh,
so just don't go to England,
hospitals.
I guess.
Yeah.
So 330 survived. 140 were healthy enough to participate and get interviewed. 9 of them recalled an NDE that fell somewhere on the Grayson scale above 0. That scale that measures how many things they saw.
32.
The one person was the right candidate, 57-year-old man, described that he floated up above. They watched him be defibrillated. He described accurately things that happened in the room for 3 minutes after he was dead. Like, again, conversation snippets, all this stuff. Yeah. So past the 20-second EEG limit. However, the shits of it is he wasn't in one of the rooms that had a fucking thing on top of the bookcase. So he was just in some ER room. The only case out of 2,000.
So that kind of was like,
right. Like, so, but it's and it proves why this is so difficult. So a medical doctor using 25 hospitals and multiple cardiologists decided we're going to try to get NDE experiences and see if they see this thing. And at the end of the day, after I think it was a 7-year run with 2,060 people, one person had a meaningful NDE and he happened to be in the wrong room. So again, the reason I'm more interested in NDEs than I am a lot of the stuff is it's not the bullshit, how come no one got a picture of Bigfoot? It's because Bigfoot doesn't fucking exist. But with these,
Brent,
it's like it just shows how really difficult it is to find someone scientifically who might have some of these experiences. And to me, 2,000 people over 7 years who had a cardiac arrest, and you have one candidate, and they weren't in the right room to confirm.
And just
this
so you
thing.
Know, Bigfoot is at Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh, you're right.
I have an idea.
Suck it.
Flatliners. That's how we're going to figure it out. We just got to start flatliners, but we do it with prisoners on death row. And we abolish.
I thought you were talking about the rap group. You remember the rap group, 1994, the Flatliners?
No.
Under Satan's authority? You never heard them?
No.
Oh, man.
No.
Flatliners USA. Check them out with a Z. They're pretty awesome.
So again, I think most of the cases of near-death experiences I would rule out as complete fucking bullshit, to be completely honest. But there are those really rare cases that have enough stuff going on that even the medical community is like, well, I don't know what to make of
that. Yeah, you can't explain. Just like anything else. But
so there needs to be an explanation. And like I said, science is actively trying to find an explanation that does not involve a soul.
I got some explanations right here.
Okay, break it down.
So we're going to play... near-death experience or death.
Okay.
So are you guys ready?
Yeah, how's this work?
Who's losing? What are you guys doing?
I don't know.
I say Brent takes the 800 Celsius hot sauce dip.
No.
If he loses.
Just me? I have a soul punishment?
Yeah.
Dave doesn't
I don't care
have
about Dave.
Ones.
No, Dave's cool. I hate you.
Apparently.
Why is it when I choose the game, there's no punishment for anybody? That's messed up.
Because you always want to punch people and
rip
their beard out or something.
I'm asking you what you want to do. You want to do like bench presses? We'll record you for Instagram. Ooh, that'd be pretty good.
It's a failure.
Is Dave over there bench pressing away?
No, I'm not bench pressing.
He'll get three reps.
I'll get three reps and throw my shoulder out.
All right. You guys will be Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, okay.
Neil deGrasse Tyson. Did I say wrong? You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
You good?
Sure.
You good? I'm looking at you, your eyeball.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. Near-death experience or death? Wish I had music, like chime music.
bong.
This is how this is going to go. I'm going to read first part of the little story, and then I will continue the story with died or the rest of the story.
Okay.
So, Callie, in 2011, Mr. A, a 57-year-old social worker, was admitted to the hospital after collapsing at work. Medical personnel were in the middle of inserting a catheter into his groin when he went into cardiac arrest. With oxygen cut off and his brain immediately flatlined, Mr. A died.
You guys ever heard of that band in the 90s called Flatliners?
Yeah, 94.
I think he got brought back because the groin was involved. Because
the groin was involved?
Because of the groin.
The nurses were in the groin
region, and it gave him reason to live.
He's alive.
Despite this, he remembers what happened next. The staff grabbed an automated external defibrillator, an AED, and shocked the delivery machine used to try and reactivate his heart. So, yes, he's still alive.
So it was the groin.
It was the groin. They rubbed it back to life.
It's like the Marvin Gaye sexual healing video.
Yep. All right. So you guys are tied?
Yes.
Yes, two Degrassis.
One Degrassi to one Degrassi.
All right. Diagnosed with lymphoma in 2002, Morjani was losing her cancer battle, withering down to just 85 pounds and battling tumors from the base of her skull to her abdomen. She slipped into a coma in February 2006.
Alive.
Goners.
Goners and alive. She says that when she died, she crossed over to the afterlife.
Damn it.
Said, I felt as though I was above my body, she said. It was like I had a 360-degree peripheral vision around the whole area, but not just in the room where my body was, beyond the room. All right.
Did you see the Cosmic Muffin?
It didn't say anything about the Cosmic Muffin.
By the way, I can't take credit for the Cosmic Muffin. That was my mentor, Dr. Stephen Carter's
term. Ah, finally you came clean. We could have some kind of copyright problem on our hands with that.
No, damn it.
Dang, there won't my shirt.
He said no, we wouldn't. No, it's just a saying.
Now we have to contact him and see if we can use it.
We're in the year 1993. Gary Hoy, a 38-year-old lawyer in Toronto, fell to his death on the 9th of July, 1993. After he threw himself against the window of the Toronto Dominion Center in an attempt to prove to a group of visitors that the glass was unbreakable, a demonstration they had done many times before. The glass did not break, but it popped out of the window frame, and he fell to the ground.
I'm going to say he's dead because he said he fell to his death. Yeah.
Well, I said the other guy died too.
Yeah, he did.
But dead.
All right. I feel dead on this one.
You feel dead?
I feel dead.
He's dead.
Okay.
He died.
I was mostly hoping he's dead because A, he's a dumbass, and B, he's a lawyer.
I don't know the other part of the story, but he was on the 24th floor.
Oof. Yeah.
And he ran into the window. So maybe the other ones that he had did were maybe on the first floor and it never broke.
Oh, that was like a thing maybe, he was demonstrating on like.
Yeah, because he had done it many times before. He was running into this unbreakable glass.
Fucking idiot.
And then he was on the 24th floor this time and just ran into it, and the whole thing, it didn't break, so he proved his
point. He's true. Yeah, I bet it broke when it hit the ground.
Yeah. He broke when it hit the ground.
He just wrote it down like an Aladdin carpet.
Woohoo! All right. Brian Miller was 41 when he was hospitalized after suffering a major heart attack while he was doing... His heart eventually went into a deadly arrhythmia.
He's alive.
I'm going to say alive.
Why do you say alive for?
Because there wouldn't even be a news story about that guy if there wasn't something more clever than what's going on right now.
I'm saying he's alive because Brent's 3 for 3 and I'm riding his coattails.
It was called a ventricular fibrillation, described by the Mayo Clinic, a rhythm problem that occurs when the heart beats with rapid, erratic electrical impulses. Brian Miller died following a massive heart attack. Miller died as hospital workers worked feverishly to get his heart working again.
That's it, huh?
He had no heart rate, he had no blood pressure, he had no pulse.
Here we go.
I mean, think about it. It was during this time that Miller said he saw the light at the end of a heavenly tunnel.
Do you read bedtime stories like this too? Your kids are just immediately asleep.
So he's still alive.
He's alive.
Dad, read me a boring story.
So, and we have one. We have one more.
Sure. Yeah. Are you guys tied?
Oh, no, he's winning.
You're down by one.
I'm down by one. So if I win this one and he loses this one, I guess we're tied and we're both doing Neil deGrasse Tyson.
All right. So
I'm going to do Mow the Grass.
Chelsea
Tyson.
Was 24. And this was in Henderson, Nevada. Working as a salon employee, was using a cryptotherapy machine. I have no idea what that is. Cryptotherapy.
You give people puzzles and it exercises.
She was using
the mind.
It alone without assistance. She did not have the level setting at the proper height and did not get enough oxygen and suffocated and froze herself.
She's dead.
I'm saying she's alive.
The coroner who examined her body described her death as a freak accident.
So she's dead.
She died.
We're tied, bitch.
No, I was one ahead.
You said, he said alive. You said dead.
Right.
I said dead.
You said dead?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what I said. He said alive.
I said dead. He said alive. I win. You do Mow deGrasse Tyson.
I tried
to trick me.
Mind trick you guys,
Mow deGrasse Tyson.
That's a new one. It's going to be a shirt with Mike Tyson mowing the lawn. No.
Mow deGrasse Tyson. Oh, that's pretty good. You better write that down so we have a proof of it.
Yeah, I need to write that down.
Mow deGrasse Tyson.
Mow the grass, Tyson.
Wow, yeah. I have no
what
idea.
What about black guys' tees?
How to do a Neil deGrasse Tyson impression.
Then do Mow the Grass Tyson, because you could do Mike Tyson. You just talk about lawn trimmings like
Mow deGrasse Tyson. That's pretty good. I'll accept that.
I think what you got to do is you got to put the grass.
You sound like Adam Sandler.
You got to put the grass in the green bin. The green bin needs to get grasses in it.
It's Adam Sandler.
The green bin needs to get grasses.
Waterboy.
I'm going to get on my little girl's skateboard and skate in my living room. Oh, shit, I fell.
My back is broken. That's what's going on. I broke my back.
What do you mean you broke your back? It's spinal.
Spinal. She'd be sending me Texas.
That's my Mow deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, my God.
So do we want to shout out our sponsors? Oh, we do want to thank Nyoka Reed.
Yep.
For giving us this topic of NDEs. So we wanted to give a shout out to Nyoka Reed for giving us the topic. As usual, we want to thank our sponsors, El Yucateco Hot Sauce, for their deliciousness.
It's hot.
Get it and put it on your food and put that food in your face and your tongue will be happy. That's their new catchphrase.
Is it?
You're welcome.
I don't know if they like our catchphrases.
And we want to thank Digital Creations for helping us with all of our promotional needs. Check them out if you're in the Bakersfield area. If you need any work done on photos, printings, anything like that, they are the ones to do your stuff. And we want to thank That Beard Stuff. I was at Brent's birthday party last night, and I do have to admit, I had the second worst beard in the room.
Hmm. You can say I was.
But all I have is a goatee. I don't have like a beard.
Yeah.
But everybody out.
It's a fledgling beard.
And
mine
many
too.
Of them. Many of them.
I still haven't shaved. It's been like a month now.
Yeah. So many of them use that beard stuff, and you could tell because we were all virile and manly.
Smells very good.
Yep.
Like almost turned you gay. You almost.
Okay.
No?
I like Brent's reaction. All right.
Well, you've been gay for a long time. Don't try to hide it now.
I know.
So that's it for the show. Don't forget, we got some shirts up. Go get them. They're going to be gone here in a few days. So.
Oh, you know what? I want to thank Chris Farrell. He gave the studio a $40 Lowe's gift card.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, all the proceeds are going to building out the studio. And if you don't know what a studio is, then I'm sorry for you, but we're building out our studio. So that way we can record professionally and have big people up in here.
I'll keep posting pictures of the progress on @SofaKingBrent.
We'll try to get Mow deGrasse Tyson to come on.
Yeah, check us out at Twitter. I am @SofaKingBrad. Dave is @SofaKingDavid. We still haven't found that damn imposter. No, that
and if you want to send us presents, it's 1931 I Street, Bakersfield, California, 93301. You can send Brad naked pictures.
Yes.
Especially if you're a dude.
Yes.
I'm just waiting to see what envelopes and boxes may show up on the counter. I'm really curious. No no poisons, no gases, no bombs, no threats.
Well, the good thing is me and Dave are safe.
Batteries or perfume.
Me and Dave are safe because you open up all the packages. So
that's true.
Podcast can continue. Anyway, check out Brent at Sofa King Brent, and that's on Instagram. We don't have anything else at Sofa King Podcast everywhere else, and I guess that's it. Have a good day.
Separate yourself from the morons. Listen to Moron Sofa King Podcast.com.